Are you guys ready to record this whole thing all over again?
I didn't care for it. I didn't buy it.
That seems pretty ridiculous.
I don't even want to think about the possibility of you having your dick out.
Yikes.
Is this the most important thing in the universe? What happened to it? I don't know.
I needed to suck in absolutely every moment of awesomeness.
Yeah.
Welcome back to another great episode of the Geek Legacy Podcast. David here with Randy and Justin. Going to talk all about stuff like Jurassic World today. And I hear I am the asshole who liked it. So, Justin, how you doing today?
I'm good, David. How are you?
Fantastic. How are you, Randy?
I am fantastic, and you're not the only asshole.
That's true. Just the biggest. So, let's go for it. It made some money this weekend. It made $140 million over the weekend. Some people obviously liked it. I sang its praises last week and said how much I enjoyed it. Saw it again. Stand by it. Really liked it. But here, I may be alone. Justin, Jurassic World.
Yeah, I kind of thought it was okay. I wasn't blown away. That's come from someone that absolutely adores the first one, enjoys the second one, and even goes so far as to say that I like the third one. But the Jurassic World series just isn't doing it for me. And this last one especially, there was this moment. There's this pivotal moment where it almost ruined the entire thing for me. And that was when the Brachiosaurus, the Brontosaurus, whatever the hell it was at the end of the dock, and the lava was coming, and I have to watch this dinosaur burn to death. And it really sort of bookends the saga for me right there in that moment, because when I first fell in love with dinosaurs was when I watched Jurassic Park, and they get to the island, they're on the Jeep, and we get to see, with Dr. Grant and Sadler, dinosaurs for the first time. And it's one of these guys standing up on its hind legs, the music's playing, it lands on all fours, and then the whole ground shakes, and from that moment on, I love dinosaurs. I'm blown away. I'm like, holy shit, they got a real dinosaur in this movie. And then fast forward to today, and then I have this island on fire, and this really iconic dinosaur doing the same thing, lifting up on its hind legs, only this time I'm not celebrating it, I'm mourning this poor creature, and it's burning to death, and that is the last shot we get of the island. And it could have just went to black, and I could have just walked out of the theater in that moment. I was so just sad and shocked at what I just saw, that it really had an impact on the whole rest of the movie, to where I don't even know if I could enjoy it if I wanted to.
Right.
Yeah, that happened in the first act, so you still had 2/3 of movie to sit through after
yes,
that.
Yes, and I was but very it's almost uncomfortable.
It's almost a beautiful metaphor, the way you put it, because I never really put two and two together, you know, because the first time we see it, it's like Malcolm said, it's like, ooh, and ah, and everything's wonderful and stuff like that, and it, you know, it brings us into this world, and it shows us the possibilities of Jurassic Park, and that we find out that most of that was a lie, and so Fallen Kingdom is really putting an end to the park, and it's going a whole different direction, and so it's almost like them killing Jurassic Park, and I was greatly saddened at its death, but Bayona did some really amazing things with light and shadow in this film, and I thought that was one of the scenes where we obviously know the Brachiosaur is not going to make it, but we don't have to see like in graphic detail and stuff like that. And you know, he did it a couple times with the lighting. Like I thought the opening scene of Jurassic World, of Fallen Kingdom, was amazing. Like, you know, the thing with the Mosasaurus and the T-Rex and stuff like that, and it really, really got me pumped up for the film. And just how we saw the big Mesosaurus in the water, towards this little ping of light, and all of a sudden you see like this lightning and this is shadow, or like you see like a crack of lightning, and you see like a T-Rex for like a millisecond, and then he's like, "What are you talking about?" And
even in the pipe, when the power was out and the light was flickering,
yeah,
yeah, that was cool too.
Yeah, but I could definitely see what you were saying.
Yeah, it was really hard for me to enjoy it from that moment on. I was just like, "Fuck this movie." I mean, we're all the three of us are very much animal lovers. We would never in a million years want to see anything be hurt. And even though this was fictional, they did such an amazing job over the last 25 years of bringing these dinosaurs to life that it was painful for me to watch that. I hated every second of it. Like Old Yeller times 1,000.
Yeah, because it's sitting there and it's like it's moaning.
Yeah, out. It's like, what about me? I want to go. Yeah.
Right. It's kind of, I don't know. I found it kind of beautiful. It was sad, but like it was this just emotional thing, and it was played for emotion, you know. And everyone's sad when it happens. Like it's not like anyone's like cheering and it's like glamorized. It's like this really sucks, and here's this beautiful creature who just was too late to the boat. You know, we didn't have room on the boat for this poor dinosaur, and we had to see this majestic beast just be like, well, there's nothing I can do. You know, I'm this huge creature who can, you know, pretty much have my way with whatever, but, you know, I can't avoid my fate type thing. Right. What do you say? What do you say, Randy?
Well, the feeling of this one, and you guys have touched on it, but I think I'm going to try to put it in a little bit different words. What really made me fall in love with the original Jurassic Park, and even 2 and 3 to a degree, is there was so much majesty and there was so much warmth and heart to it, and it was just fun. Even when there was danger, the movie just emanated fun, and I loved it so very much. Now it feels a little bit more cold, a little bit more sci-fi, less kind of has less heart, and then just less to kind of pull me in and keep me there. It just feels a little bit more cold and clinical now, like so many of the other big tentpole blockbusters. And I really feel like that is where the big departure between the Jurassic Park and the Jurassic World series has been for me. I still enjoyed it. I would still watch it again. There were parts of it that I absolutely adored. But for the most part, I don't know. It might as well be a reboot at this point in time, which I kind of think that's the direction they've been heading with it. But it's just we are so far removed from the original and from what made the original so great that we just... we might as well be plotting a different course at this point. Right. Now, it seems to me that human cloning, spoiler alert, is the natural progression in these movies. So it totally makes sense that that's the direction this one took. And the genetically modified super beast thing is pretty cool. Luckily, so far, we haven't seen any of them toting machine guns and speaking English like we heard was going to be... rumored for an older version of the fourth Jurassic Park movie. We heard rumors about like 5 or 6 years ago, but I'm glad they haven't gone that ridiculous route with it yet. But being that it is, you know, more sci-fi, less science, potential reality kind of thing, now it just feels like, well, we're not too far off from that. And you know what? That's fine.
Yeah,
this is the world we live in now. I still enjoy it, but in a different way.
Yeah, and Crichton, you know, who wrote the original Jurassic Park, you know, the original Jurassic Park isn't the fun action adventure movie, adventure story that, you know, we get in the movie. That's a lot of that is Spielberg, and that's why I adore it, because Spielberg is an incredible storyteller. And while a lot of the beats are in the book is really heavy in the Lost World novel, even further so of the, should we be doing this? You know, are these real creatures? Are these properties? You know, what is the next steps for this kind of research, for this kind of genetics? And I think that it was always Crichton's belief that human application would be there, that, you know, the park was the method to get the mainstream involved in this genetic Cold War. And I really like that they brought in Lockwood, you know, and, you know, his John Hammond's former partner and stuff like that. And just, I love the original book. I love the questions it asks. And I felt that, I agree with you that this is less fun adventure, more science fiction, more kind of, you know, I dare say thought-provoking, you know, like what's happening, you know, at the end, you know, these dinosaurs are loose. I'm interested and excited at the possibility of what's going on. I think that a lot of people are turned off by the idea of, you know, pteranodons on the Eiffel Tower in Las Vegas. If you saw the end credit scene, or Blue in whatever city he's at. But I think that it's cool. I think that, you know, they separated the dinosaurs on the island. They gave them the isolationist approach, and now they're we're just going to have to deal with them. Either we have to figure out if we're going to hunt them down and kill them, or if we're going to try to preserve them, or if, you know, they're just going to multiply and take us over. So did the ending turn you off, Justin? Do you like the question, the possibilities, or do you think it's kind of a dumb way to end it?
I think I was okay with it. It's just one of those things where now the world has to be prepared for dinosaurs again.
Yeah.
They have that conversation at the beginning in the courtroom, and now it's here. So, I mean, I'm honestly, I don't even know what to think anymore. I was so just irritated. I don't know why it struck such a chord with me, but it did, man. But in the end, I think it's great. I prefer this outcome to them all suffocating and dying at the end of it. Like, I don't want that. So, I think part of me always thought that there was going to be this island somewhere out there that housed dinosaurs, and that was going to be the end of it. But unfortunately, you can't really have an island without volcanoes. So, it's just sad the way the world works. Science, right? But,
well, there is still Site B, where Jurassic Park 3, or... Which one has some...
Two takes place on Isla Sorna.
Sorna, yeah.
Which is infinite. Which is like 10 times the size of Isla Nublar.
Yeah.
Nublar? I hardly know her.
So, I mean, yeah, there definitely still is, you know, Isla Sorna. There are, in theory, there are two T-Rexes there. Oh, three, if I guess there's the baby.
Baby?
Whoa. Well, what do you think about the future of the franchise, Randy? Are you excited for a few? You know, we know Colin Trevorrow is going to direct Jurassic World 3. You know, it made $150 million domestically, quite a bit more worldwide. There's definitely going to be a third Jurassic World. Are you excited for it? You think the franchise needs to dip out after the second trilogy, or do you think that it could have legs after a third installment?
Well, I think it really comes down to how much later is the next one going to take place, because, like you were saying, you know, we've got pteranodons over the Las Vegas Strip. We've got Blue overlooking freaking suburbia. And all those dinosaurs that were purchased through the black market auction and made it out before all the shenanigans went down in that facility, not to mention all the embryos and shit. I mean... their dinosaurs are going to come back in a big, bad way. So, you know, calling this trilogy Jurassic World is really, you know, it's really foreshadowing how this is going to end. The dinosaurs are going to take over the planet, and the question is, how are we going to cohabitate with them on a large scale? You know, it's not going to be so that they're just segregated onto an island and safe away from the population. It's like, we are trying to reintegrate them in a way that they were never meant to be integrated into the modern world. So I do like thematically where that's going. But what it comes down to more directly answer your question, what it comes down to is, how are they going to treat that in part three? Is it going to take place 20 years down the road and they are just as prevalent as fucking coyotes and bobcats? Or are they going to, you know, is it going to take place immediately right afterwards and they're trying to nip it in the bud before it gets out of control? Who knows? But I like the idea of seeing what this civilization would look like 20 or 50 years down the road when we're having to deal with the aftermath of all of this. But then again, they can't probably do that because then they're not going to be able to have Chris Pratt star in it if it takes place dramatically further on down the road.
Right.
And he's their star.
What did you think of the filmmaking as a whole, Randy? Like, you know, I mentioned, you know, the lighting and the fun shadows and lighting effects. And there was the scene where they're in the geosphere and it falls off the cliff and they have the underwater scene that's like one take.
Yeah, no, it's a beautiful movie, and there's a lot of innovative camera movement and lighting, like you said, is just fantastic. It is a really technically well-done movie, and the suspense, I thought, was handled very well. Like when they're inside the individual little vignettes inside the what looks like the Natural History Museum at... you know, in that guy's house, when they're inside behind the glass and all of a sudden the power comes back on and it's so bright, you know, the girl just sees her reflection, but you see a little bit of the, what was it called? The Indoraptor. Yeah. The Indoraptor on the other side of the glass. It's just like, I love the suspense that was built. I thought it was really well done. I mean, top to bottom, the film was very well made. Even to the point where Justin and I were talking about this before the movie, and we talked about it already now here too. When you're watching that Brachiosaur die on the dock there, it is genuinely, you know, gut wrenching. If that doesn't rip your heart out and stomp it onto the ground, you know, nothing will. But that is a tribute to how well this film is made. You know, not even looking at how well it may or may not rhyme to the original Jurassic Park. Just the fact that you can see this and have it emotionally affect you like that for nothing. Absolutely. That entire scene top to bottom was CG. There's probably not even a real background element in that whole thing. It was all fucking fake, but it made us feel something. So that's a tribute to the filmmakers. But I really think technically it was really well done, and it's not a bad movie. It's really entertaining. It's just, to me, I'll go back to what I said. It just kind of lacked the heart of the original. That's the only thing that I felt was missing.
That's fair. Well, Justin, let's do the inevitable. Where would you grade it? What would you grade it? And of the five Jurassic Park films, what would your just quick ranking be?
Oh shit. Okay. I would say that it is a 6 out of 10, and I would rate them in order in which they came out. 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5.
When's the last time you saw 3?
The same year Jurassic World came out.
Oh, okay. All right. What say you, Rando?
Oh, boy. I think mine would probably be very similar to that, but I actually like 3 more than 2. So mine would probably be 1, 3, 2, 4, 5.
I thought you were actually going to say Jurassic World, then 3. I thought that was going to be the difference. I thought it was going to go 1, 2, 4, 3, 5.
I do like Jurassic World a lot, but something about the original 3, I'm just an old sucker for nostalgia.
Wow.
And I would rate it a B minus.
I would say I would rank it a B plus, and my order would probably go. I don't know if I want to say it. My definitely the first Jurassic Park, then The Lost World, then Fallen Kingdom, then Jurassic World, and then Jurassic Park 3. I watched all of them within the last month, and Jurassic Park 3 is a total shit show.
What? It's got The Ring. It's got William H. Macy. It's got Taya Leone there. She survived the tsunami.
It's got T-Rex piss.
That movie is garbage.
True attitude.
It's bad. Any of the other four, I would happily watch at any point. 3, I would really have to be in the mood.
Oh man, it's got or have lost a bit. It's got talking raptors.
Yes, Alan. Yeah, the pterodactyl scene is probably the only decent set piece in the whole film. You know that, and then possibly the Spinosaurus fight in the river is also good. But other than that, it's just garbage. Like the whole and they really go out of their way to make the raptors just pointless. And and they kill the T-Rex. That's the saddest moment all of the movies to me is when the Spinosaurus snaps the T-Rex's neck. I'm like, oh. But I'm sentimental, I guess. I like my predators with short arms.
Yeah.
Well, all right. Well, we'd love to hear what you thought of Jurassic World, Fallen Kingdom. Hit us up on Twitter, Acting Legacy, and let us know how much you loved it or hated it or thought it was just meh. So I think we've talked about it a lot. Meh is probably the worst thing. You know, indifference is the death of art, you know. You can hate something or love something. It stirs a conversation, and that's what art is meant to do. If you get no reaction or if it just becomes totally forgettable, then it's unfortunate. Something that I will not soon forget is I finally got to see Won't You Be My Neighbor, the Mr. Rogers documentary, and I cannot recommend it high enough. It's, you know, a lot of people are down right now thinking that the world is a shit show and that everything is bad and stuff like that. If you need a pick-me-up, if you need something to like show you that people are good or the power of people or the power of what one man can do, you should go see Won't You Be My Neighbor. It opened up in a little bit wider release this weekend. So it's probably playing at a movie theater relatively close to you. It's definitely worth watching. You know, Mr. Rogers was obviously an amazing man who was one of the people who shepherded the public broadcasting system, PBS. His show was on for several decades. He, you know, was entertaining children. And most of us have seen several clips online or people have shared on Facebook of, you know, his enormous generosity and just his love for children. And you should definitely check it out. And it will definitely be the winner for Best Documentary at this year's Oscars. And it'll make you smile, it'll make you cry, but happy tears. And yeah, there were people that were just like blubbering messes around me, including my buddy Chung, who I took, who was hit right in the feels. So, is this on either of your radars, Randy, Justin?
Mm-mm. I know of its existence, but I had no intention of seeing it.
Do you still have no intention of seeing it?
Well, after that glowing review, I'm curious, but I didn't grow up with Mr. Rogers, though. I never really watched it, so I don't have that all-powerful nostalgia that seems to fuel a lot of my decisions. It doesn't really play into it for me.
I never watched a single episode of Mr. Rogers.
Okay.
But it was. I mean, I knew of him, you know. I think everyone knows of him. But it was great to see, you know, just how political and relevant his show actually was. You know, I didn't realize because I didn't watch that, you know, he started in like the mid to late 60s, you know, during the height of the Vietnam War. And a lot of his stories were, you know, about that, you know, kind of taking it to a child's level of, you know, you're hearing things, you know, or the Challenger disaster or 9/11, you know, he was still in the air when 9/11 happened. And, you know, just how he kind of explained it to kids and kind of made, you know, because kids are, he knew kids were hearing the whispers, you know, on the TV or from their parents. And so he was kind of bringing it down to their level and, you know, letting them know, you know, it's okay to be scared, you know, this is what's happening and, you know, without being overly graphic and stuff like that. But I'm sure it'll come to Netflix. Netflix seems to be really the champion of documentary filmmaking. And, as soon as it comes to Netflix, I think you'll get a real kick out of watching it.
Cool. I can't wait now.
Yeah. You will dig it.
You have made me a believer.
It will make you happy, and it will cure what ails you, because your Indiana Jones 5 delayed, not coming out in 2020.
Dear God, man, Harrison Ford is not getting any younger.
Yeah. Yeah, it's unfortunate, but it's for good reasons. You know, they've decided that they weren't happy with the script, and they brought on Kasdan from Solo, not Lawrence Kasdan, but his son Jack. He's doing a pass on the script, and so because of that, it's delaying it. So Spielberg is going to bump West Side Story up to his next film, so he will not be available to direct it. You know, they wanted to start shooting early next year, but that is not going to be possible now. But, Randy, it's good to delay this movie for that reason, right? Because, I mean, Crystal Skull is so reviled, you know, they really got to get it right this time, right?
Yeah, I'm glad they're keeping it in the Kasdan family. Not that I have any who wrote the last one? Cope?
Yes. He wrote the last draft of this.
Yeah, he also did The Last Crusade, though, too, which everybody seems to love. So, I don't know, but
you love The Last Crusade, Randy? Do you want to do this again? You brought it up.
I love Last Crusade. I just don't love it as much as I love Raiders. Oh. I think it's going to be in good hands with the younger Kasdan. So I think that's a good choice, and I think it's an excellent choice to delay it. Now, I of course was the first to point out that, you know, Harrison Ford's not getting any younger, but if it means, because this is realistically our last outing with that character, certainly our last outing with Harrison Ford portraying that character, let's send it out right. Let's send it out correctly and do something that everybody will love and cherish, not be the butt of more jokes. That franchise can't take any more of that.
What do you think, Justin? Same thing?
Ugh.
Just couldn't care less.
I like Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade. That's all I have to say about it.
It's a good one.
I don't know, man. I can't take another Crystal Skull. Can't do it.
Do you think the franchise could tank another Crystal Skull? Do you think another Crystal Skull would taint the other movies?
I don't know. That's tough. No, because I think people our age and are in our generation, you know, they're always going to have Raiders and Temple and Last Crusade. So I think they're always just going to be sort of held into a higher standard. But I don't know, man. I just don't know if audiences today care. I just don't think that they care. It's not. It's weird. I don't know. I feel like. I don't know, it's hard to sum this up, but do you remember when, like, Egyptology was really exciting? And, like, you just loved the idea of discovering all these things and how amazing it is, and we don't really know what's going on? I feel like that kind of ended with us.
Right. We know, like, everything.
Everything's already been discovered.
Yeah.
And so, and even though that was kind of already true by the time these movies came out, it wasn't. Like, you're still learning new things, but now I just feel like there's no more mystery left on this planet. It's sort of the ocean, but I don't know. I feel like we're spoiled rotten, and no one really gives a shit about this character, let alone him being in his 70s or 80s.
Mm-hmm.
I think the exciting time is the time when we didn't know what was going on, when there was still all this fun artifacts that were missing or were myth or legend, and I think we're past all that. So it's a tough sell, in other words, is what I'm saying.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, I mean, it seems like the big thing for franchises now, you know, like with your Star Wars and stuff like that, is to introduce the newer generation of fan base to these new movies in hopes that they'll go back and watch the older films and then start the legacy of the franchise over again. You know, Crystal Skull didn't really give us that because nobody really liked it, not even the kids and stuff like that. Do you think that the franchise, this is kind of its last hurrah? If it hits a home run, you know, it'll reinvigorate, you know, this generation to Indiana Jones, and they'll go back and watch it. And if it fails, you know, this is kind of the swan song for Indiana Jones. But if it does hit, do you think that, you know, they're ready for more Indy without Harrison?
I think we've been ready for a while. Even just a couple years ago when we were talking about the rumors that Chris Pratt was going to come into the franchise and possibly play a younger Indiana Jones. I was totally on board with that. I'm fine if they end up going the James Bond route. But just as so long as they keep that character rooted in that time period, 30s, 40s, that kind of thing, the World War II era, pre-World War II era. But I'm completely okay with that. Yeah, I think they would love for something to connect with today's audiences to really promote that franchise and breathe new life into it, kind of the way The Force Awakens did with Star Wars. But realistically, do I think that's going to happen? Sadly, probably not. I think the best thing that we can hope for and what we should kind of emotionally and mentally prepare ourselves for right now is just let's get a good send-off for Harrison Ford. Let's see one last ride with the character we all know and love and go into it assuming that we're never going to see him ride again.
Do you see Indiana Jones as kind of like the modern-day, like, Buck Rogers or Flash Gordon, you know, these huge, monstrous, iconic characters from previous generations who don't really resonate nowadays, but, you know, people who love them, you know, like your Lucases and stuff like that, you know, who revile those kind of films. You know, they're like, oh, back in my day, these were the great movies. Are we going to be like 20 years from now? Back in my day, Raiders of the Lost Ark was the second best Indiana Jones movie.
Oh, absolutely. You know, because they just don't make movies like that anymore, you know. And we don't revere movie stars quite the same way that we did in the past either. You know, there hasn't been quite somebody of Harrison Ford's stature, you know, in a while. Sure, we've got people that are in a lot of movies and a lot of successful movies, big franchises, that kind of thing. But you don't really look at them the same way you look at. They don't have that movie star appeal necessarily. Maybe it's because in this modern era of social media, everybody seems a little bit more approachable because you can see a little bit more of their day-to-day lives and see their thoughts you know, broadcasts online for the world to see, but it makes them a little bit more human. And whereas we were so much further away from them in previous generations, but I don't know. I don't think we're ever going to, I don't think movies are ever going to go back to the way they were, nor our reaction to movie stars.
All right. Well, and that is sad.
Aw. Mm-hmm. Used to be glamour, Ruth.
Now they're all in the mud with us.
Yeah. With cigarette holders.
Ooh, like the long ones.
Yeah.
Like Virginia Slims.
Used to be cool to be a movie star, and now you're just some doucher on Snapchat.
Yeah. Hey, you remember like 5 years ago when Showtime was making a Halo series and Peter Jackson was making a Halo movie and Halo games were still like awesome?
They are all those things.
Well, none of those things happened, except maybe Halo is still awesome.
I remember when it was with the movie, though, wasn't it going to be like around, like District 9 ended up being what happened instead?
Yeah, it was going to be, Peter Jackson and Blomkamp were going to make a Halo, and then it ended up, they're like, well, we're still going to make a movie.
Yeah, and then I remember Xbox, when the Xbox had their own studio that they were going to make TV shows and movies, and I think like Spielberg or somebody was supposed to be involved with it.
He absolutely was.
And then that got scrapped. They shut down it all. Burned that mother down.
Yeah. Well, luckily it sounds like Spielberg never really lost the taste for Halo, because his Amblin television wing is going to produce it in conjunction with Microsoft and 343 Studios, who are the producers of the popular Xbox game. It's going to be showrun by Rupert Wyatt, who directed Rise of the Planet of the Apes. No word on an exact release date, but it's going to be an hour-long show. It's going to be on Showtime. There's not a ton of details that have been around it, but yeah, it's Showtime was the one that was going to do it in 2004. It fell through. Sorry, 2014. I think we're all big Halo fans. So, Justin, you're the resident video game guy. What does this say for, you know, video games and pop culture? You know, they kind of get a bum rap in the film industry. You know, is this a long form storytelling, something that a story like Halo can really thrive in?
I think so. I think a movie's tough, but I think a series isn't a bad idea, especially like an Amazon or a Showtime, HBO, Netflix sort of idea where you're able to really flesh out the story over the course of several hours instead of cramming it into a 90-minute or two-hour movie.
Yeah, they have a 10-episode deal right now. So.
Yeah, and that's, I think
so you
that's
get 10
fantastic.
Hours.
Yeah. I don't want them to waste too much time on Origins or anything like that, but I do want there to be risk, and I want no characters to be safe. I think that is the... Aside from the Master Chief, of course, but I want us to fall in love with different Space Marines and then, you know, have to deal with that struggle of losing them or things like that. And I also think it would be really cool if... You know, we get to know the Covenant and find out what they're all about and really explore their way of thinking and their crazy Bible-thumping ways, because they're a bunch of religious nutjobs. And I do think that there's something to be said about that and why their people are the way that they are.
Yeah, and I mean, Halo's a huge property with millions of fans. I mean, there's no reason this couldn't be an enormous, you know, I dare say, like, you know, Game of Thrones level,
absolutely,
you know, of a success, because Game of Thrones is still a genre show, you know, with dragons and sorcerers and stuff. So I mean, it's not a
bunch of nerds.
So it's not like it's like a mainstream four quadrant television show. To where Halo's basically the same thing, just in a different, you know, in the future, you know, instead of dragons, we've got spaceships and stuff like that. To where, you know, you could really do some really rad stuff with this.
Sure.
Looks like they're going to start filming in early 2019, so it probably won't premiere until sometime in 2020. But yeah, Randy, you love Halo, right?
I do indeed. And I would love to see a series treat it properly. I remember there was a web series just a couple years back. It didn't really have to do with like Master Chief or any of the like regular armored Halo people? What were the ones that were in those little dropship things that they made a whole separate like
ODST or
ODST? Yeah, I think it was more ODST themed. I never really got into it, but seeing that world in live action really made me want either a movie or a TV series or something where we actually got to see a little bit more of what the original video game shows us.
Was there any Halo news at E3, Justin?
Yeah, there was a new game.
Oh, was there?
Yeah.
Oh, shit, I missed that. Did they announce, like, a release date and stuff? And...
No, it was just how their, it's called Halo Infinite, and it was the opening trailer to the Xbox conference.
Oh, was it awesome?
It was incredible, except, yeah, it was weird because... it's this beautiful world. You're like, where the hell are they? Are they on Pandora? What's going on? And then you see like these four like silhouettes, and they're all kind of coming together and everything. And then it kind of zooms up to the top of this mountain, and then you just see Master Chief's like left leg, and then his helmet. Like he's holding his helmet. It's not on.
Oh, not like a severed left leg.
No. It's just a shot of his lower half. And it's just one leg though, and then his hands holding his helmet, and then it ends.
Oh.
And it's like, oh my god, the Batman.
So it's their way of saying we're making it. We don't know when it's going to be out.
Yeah.
Making it.
It's a TBD, but it's one of them things where in 2013, we had the there was a Halo reveal for the Xbox One, and then it wasn't until 2015 when the game came out. So, I'd say within the next 2 years is a safe bet.
Yeah. All right. Well, anxiously await, and we'll all have to find someone who's got Showtime anytime so we can borrow their passwords.
Exactly.
I mean, I'm a subscriber to HBO, of course. You know, I would never do something like that. Game of Thrones, you know, that'll eventually come back, right?
Yeah.
Next year. We're like a year away from... A year from now, Game of Thrones will be over.
That's a depressing thought.
It kind of is. There's been a lot of leaks online about the next season, and like an idiot, I've read them all, and I'm hoping a lot of them aren't true. So let's cross our fingers for pirates not knowing what the fuck they're talking about.
Right.
And then in the meantime, we'll switch over to happier, possibly, terms that the DC Universe revealed the details of their own streaming service. It will be a pay service on par with, you know, CBS All Access, you know, Netflix, Hulu, you know, all the other HBO Go or HBO Now, sorry. No comment on pricing or when we can expect to see it. We do know that the new Teen Titans-based show Titans, of which we just saw a pretty sweet picture of what Robin will look like, is going to air on that network. So you're going to have to pay to see Titans. It's not going to be something that's going to be available to be seen on any kind of network television show. They're also working on Doom Patrol, Swamp Thing, and they'll come out in 2019, and also an animated series with Harley Quinn and another one with Young Justice. So... they announced all that, but then they also announced that their streaming service will be the exclusive place to see the original four Superman movies with Christopher Reeve, the original Wonder Woman series, and probably what will get most people excited, especially Justin, it will be where you can stream Batman the Animated Series.
Ooh.
So they're going to have all of the animated Justice League or animated DC movies. And they've also teased animated comics, like to where you'd be able to read comics, certain comics at certain times on the service. So we talk every time there's a new streaming service, we talk about the importance of it and if it's something that we would ever spend money on. So I will start with Mr. Justin because I know he loves Batman the Animated Series. Probably has them all on his flash drive that he watches every night before he goes to bed.
No, that's King of the Hill.
Does this interest you at all?
No, not really. I'm good. I actually own every episode of the Batman the Animated Series, but I had bought them on DVD when those were a thing. As it stands right now, the animated series is available on Amazon Prime, so I've always just been able to just pop those in. But... I think it's exciting for DC fans out there, but I am not going to jump on board. I am over it.
When I bought Batman Animated Series Season 1 on DVD, it came with a free ticket to see Catwoman.
Oh, wow.
So, I mean, I really bought the Catwoman ticket, and it came with the Batman the Animated Series.
And you've been tainted ever since.
That's right. What about you, Randy? Is this just another unnecessary streaming service?
Yeah, I mean, they're going to nickel and dime us to death with all these different streaming services. And, you know, when Disney gets theirs off the ground, that's going to be the home of Marvel, too. So it's, you know, we're going to have a lot of options, that's for sure. But it really does seem kind of messy. There almost needs to be some sort of master service that amalgamates everything, kind of puts it together. And almost like cable does now, where you can get, you know, the package with Showtime and Cinemax and HBO. Like, get me a streaming package where I can get HBO and I can get Disney and I can get Netflix. And, you know, it's basically the internet's version of cable is where it feels like this is going. And I don't know exactly how I feel about that. But is there anything that is going to draw me specifically to a DC Universe streaming service? As much as I love Batman the Animated Series and the original Superman movies, that kind of thing, I don't know, man. I don't think there's, unless there's some really compelling content, I'm probably not going to go for it. At least not year one, anyway. You know, let them build up a nice little library, then I'll maybe give it a whirl. But yeah, we're just going to get bombarded to death with all these streaming services.
Now, do you think that this is Netflix asleep at the wheel, focusing too much on original content and letting too much of the streaming ecosphere become decentralized? You know, because for a long time it was only Netflix, and there was only Netflix and Hulu, then it was only Netflix, Hulu, and Amazon Prime, and now it just seems that, you know, we keep hearing all of these other services popping up and all of these other you know, properties that were mainstays of Netflix, you know, going to Hulu. You know, Hulu seems to be really collecting, like, older shows, you know, that people want to see for nostalgia reasons. Do you think that Netflix had the world by the balls and is kind of shifting their paradigm and their business model, and because of that, we're starting to see all these streaming services? Or do you think this was just the evolution of the paradigm? You know, once everyone started cutting the cords, the cable companies, the networks needed to find a new way to get revenue because people weren't watching them on cable.
Yeah, you know, I think this is inevitable. I think this was always going to head this direction. It was just a matter of, you know, when was it going to happen? And we kind of finally hit that tipping point. There's no way that Netflix is going to be able to hold on to all the great programming that they've had, and the way they have, you know, just to keep things new and fresh, they kind of have to have like a cycle. It has to be a quick turnaround, a constant turnaround. I just watched Caddyshack, you know, a couple months ago, and I'm like, damn it, I kind of want to watch Caddyshack again. I don't believe I don't own this movie. And I knew I had just watched it on Netflix, so I go to look for it, and motherfucker, it's gone. Like, But they do that. They'll bring certain movies or TV shows on for like a 6-month run or a 4-month run, and then they'll retire it for a while and bring it back. It reminds me of the old Disney VHS model. Every 7 years,
back in the vault.
Yeah, out of the vault. Every 7 years, you get access to whatever Disney classic they're trying to throw in your face. It kind of feels like Netflix is doing a real similar thing, just to kind of keep their catalog new and different, and kind of keep you guessing. To make you scroll through endlessly all that shit just to see what is still there and what is new, that kind of thing. That sometimes I could waste a goddamn hour just looking on Netflix for something to watch. I got a million things in my queue, but I could just scroll. I could eat up so much goddamn time just trying to figure out the perfect thing to sit and watch. But that's my own problems coming to the surface. I don't know, man. I don't think Netflix dropped the ball. I think this was just a natural evolution.
Yeah, there's a great website called justwatch.us, and that'll tell you what's streaming. So, like, if you ever are thinking, like, where's this movie streaming? You go to justwatch.us, type in it, it'll tell you if it's on, you know, if it's on Netflix, Hulu, Amazon. If it's not anywhere, it'll tell you, like, where you can rent. It'll have links to where you can buy it from Amazon or from iTunes or anything like that. So it's a very useful resource tool, research tool. So, Well, I also don't think I will be purchasing this. I don't really see the need. I own all the Superman movies. I own the first three seasons of Batman the Animated Series, and I have no interest in watching most of the rest of the stuff on here, if I haven't already seen it. So yeah. And then I guess we would be remiss if we did not talk about all of the stuff going on with MoviePass and their new competitor, the AMC Stubbs Plus membership. I am a MoviePass purveyor. I love the service. I have used it a lot. I've gotten way more than my $9 or $7.50 a month because I did the annual contract. But MoviePass is starting to make some deals that may turn off new customers. You know, of course, the model right now is $9.99 a month. If you pay monthly, you get to see as many movies as you can see one movie a day, every day. You can't reserve tickets ahead of time, and you can't see premium showings like IMAX or 3D. But now they've announced that they will now, coming soon, they'll give you the option to buy those premium tickets. You will have to pay a surcharge to do it. I guess surcharges will start at $2. So I think a lot of people are happy about that because it gives them the option if they want to. They're not happy that now they're kind of like how Uber does surge pricing when things are
in
an area that's hot. Sure. Now they're going to do movies that are popular or movies that are hot, so probably new releases. They're going to start doing surge prices to where if you want to see that movie when it's out opening day, you may have to pay a small fee to see, which I think is terrible and bullshit. And luckily, if you're in an annual contract like I am, that does not apply to you. It only applies to the month-to-month purveyors. But it seems to be the opposite of the whole spirit of MoviePass.
Yeah.
And so their stock price, so when they announced that they were going to the $9.99 a month model, their stock surged to, I want to say, $58 a share, and it is currently trading at 25 cents a share.
Wow. So
that's pretty catastrophic as far as, you know, your valuation as a company. So a lot of people are, of course, wondering, you know, the viability of the company. I hope they stay around till December because that's when my year annual membership expires. And so hopefully they will make it to December. AMC, like I said, announced their plans for their MoviePass type service called Stubbs Plus. It's $19.99 a month. You can see up to three movies a week, but there are restrictions. You can see three movies in one day if you want, or you can space them out over the entire week. You can see any type of movie. You can see the premium showings. You can see, you know, your IMAXs, your 3D showings. You can reserve your tickets ahead of time, and it also allows you to have all the perks of a Stubbs membership, which, you know, is not inconsequential. You know, they give you, you know, upgrades. You know, you buy a small popcorn, they upgrade to a large popcorn for free, you know. You get your free refills on your sodas and your popcorn, as well as other various discounts and stuff like that. So, yeah, I know you guys are not currently a subscriber to a film program. Do you think that the model of subscription that MoviePass has proven its viability in that people are interested in the product? I mean, they obviously have mismanaged their company, but do you ever see yourself going to a subscription plan, Justin? It'd be a MoviePass or anything else?
Maybe. What was the swing again on the stock? What was it as much as?
I want to say it was $58. It might have been $38.
And now it's like 35 cents?
Now it's 25 cents.
25 cents. Okay. So back in 2011, Netflix made a crazy announcement that they were going to separate its services and change its name to Quickster. Do you guys remember that at all? Mm-hmm. Where they were going to have the DVD business be one thing and the streaming service be another. And the whole world just fucking lit the internet on fire and it was awful. And Netflix was like, okay, fooled you. April Fools. It's not going to happen. So, and now their stock is through the roof. It's like almost $400 a share. They're killing it. And it's amazing, right? Everyone loves fucking Netflix. It's become a household name. Like, the Netflix and chill, you know? That's just, no matter what you're streaming, oh, I just watched Netflix, is what you can say to somebody, rather than, break down what your actual streaming service is. And I feel like companies, if they're lucky, get one chance to fuck up and bounce back from it. So hopefully this is their last and only major fuck up, and they're able to bounce back from it. But you said a couple shows ago they were hemorrhaging money because they're actually losing money from this service. Is that right?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the average movie ticket price right now in the United States is a little over $9, and so for at $9.95 a month, you know, or if you're doing the traditional month-to-month service, I mean, they're making $8 or 80 cents off of you if you watch one movie.
Okay.
If you watch two movies, they're losing $10.
Right. That's a lot. And people go to the motion picture shows often because they want to get the most out of their pass, right?
Exactly.
And so they have to start making money. So you're going to start seeing these changes, right? It only makes fiscal sense that they have to do something to get their money back. And it sounds like that's what the tune that they're playing. But I don't know, man. I think if I were a betting man, which I'm not because I lose at everything I bet on, I would say that they are going the quick way to just run out of business.
Yeah, and I think their business model was always, because the studios and theater chain owners have kind of a contentious relationship, to where the theater owners don't share a lot of their data with the studios, just because they don't get along. And the thing with MoviePass was they planned on making their money by selling their data to the studios,
right,
for enormous amounts of money, because their data is very valuable. You know, they saw this movie this many times in this many weeks at this time, you know, screenings at this time to better to screenings at this time, you know, all the information they'd want. On top of that, they also are able to do advertising. I mean, like we talked about Gaudi a couple weeks ago, to where MoviePass really pushed Gaudi. And, you know, since, you know, so many tickets are bought through MoviePass, you know, that's very targeted marketing, you know, for your company and stuff like that. So it seems like they should be able to make a significant profit from just those two revenue streams, but for whatever reason, they haven't been able to put two and two together, and you know, AMC has been very combative to MoviePass, because AMC's fear was always that MoviePass would come in, have this great offer, get people excited, get people used to paying next to nothing to go see movies, MoviePass would fold, people would be like, wait, why do I have to pay us extra money now? I was only paying like $2 a week ago, and then just stop going to the movies. And so I think that's kind of the reason that AMC is trying to put their service out there. And, you know, they're obviously backed by a company, you know, so they're providing a service in their own industry. So it's not like MoviePass, to where MoviePass has to pay these people, to where it's just them. They have you in their theater now. They can make some money off concessions. They can make money off of if you bring a friend, you know, because people don't just go to the movies by themselves. And so, Randy, do you ever see yourself going to a subscription model for film going?
Realistically, not, only because gone are the days when I used to plan ahead of time if I was going to go see a movie and make a big deal about it. Right now, it's a lot of spur of the moment, or oh shit, that's out this weekend, let's get tickets real quick and go see it so we don't have it spoiled, or so that I can talk about it with any kind of authority on the podcast. And if new releases or any kind of premium things, because I also like going to the luxury theaters where it's like teen and over, so you don't have like kids doing kid things in the middle of a movie. Right.
You can go there on MoviePass.
Yeah, and that's cool. That's cool. But I like the occasional IMAX. I like the occasional 3D, and I like seeing shit the weekend it opens when I can. And it seems like that is something that I would have to plan around, and I would end up probably getting the service and rarely ever using it. So I don't foresee myself buying in on that anytime soon. I like the idea that it exists, but I'm also concerned with, you know, all the shit that we've heard about MoviePass having problems. So it's like that would be one of the biggest things preventing me from pulling the trigger.
Yeah, I think MoviePass is not long for this world. I think they'll make it to their next stockholder meeting, which is like November, near the end of the year. And I think at that point they'll have to make some form of announcement. And at which point I'll happily jump over to AMC. I think AMC's got a pretty good program. It's a little bit more, so it really makes use of the fact you have to see at least two movies a month, which obviously I don't have much of a problem doing. But yeah, I really, ever since I was a kid, I always liked the idea of like an annual pass for movies, to where you see as many movies as you wanted for whatever price. Yeah. And while I would have used it a lot more in my 20s than I'm using it now, when I used to go to the movie theater like several times a week, it's allowing me to see a lot more like movies that I would normally like either not see or wait till it came out on like DVD or something like that. I think independent films are really benefiting from the subscription model because, you know, people are already going to go out and see Avengers and Star Wars and Batman and Superman and maybe not those two. They're always going to go out and they're going to see that. But, you know, when you're looking on your app, you're like, oh, what's playing? You know, oh, I'm going to go see, you know, Padman, which was, I don't know if I've told you guys about it. It was a movie all in Hindi. So it was a movie from India. It was about a guy who wanted to make a better maxi pad, and it was hysterical. It was actually a really good movie. It had a really sweet message, but I would have never seen that. But it was playing it like the block, and I'm like, hey, that looks interesting. Let me check this out. Same thing with Won't You Be My Neighbor. You know, that's something I would have waited for Netflix. I might not have wanted to like risk $10 on it or something like that, but I'm glad I did because it was amazing. So I think there is a value to subscription service. I just don't think that MoviePass is going to last.
Yikes.
That's sad.
Sorry.
It's like Brontosaurus dying on a
dock. Man.
Man, why'd you have to go back to that?
Well, that's all I got, boys. You got anything, Randy?
I don't have, oh, you know what? Yeah, I guess I kind of do have something, you know,
sounds so exciting.
Yeah. Well, you know, I am going to be doing another epic World of Warcraft themed music video with Songhammer, and, it's going to be timed to be released, before BlizzCon this year. It's going to be all about, the new World of Warcraft expansion, Battle for Azeroth. In fact, that's the name of the song. And, they just launched a Kickstarter campaign, this week. They're trying to raise 10 grand because they really want to make this a pretty freaking epic video. And, they're already over 1700, which is pretty cool. So, yeah, give that a chance. If you, give it a look, see if you get the opportunity, just go to Indiegogo and type in Songhammer. You'll see my mug on the video, the plea video, chatting for a moment about visual effects and whatnot. And then you get to see, the band doing their shenanigans, trying to talk you into parting with a few shekels so we can make this video. But it's going to be a lot of fun. It's going to be really cool. And if you're a fan of World of Warcraft, and if you're a fan of epic cosplay rock bands, then you probably are aware of these guys and the cool shit that they make. So you can be a part of that cool shit as well. And if you live in the Southern California area, you are more than welcome to be in the video, which we'll be shooting in August. That is all detailed if you go to their Indiegogo page. So check it out.
Shit. Taran's kicking trash cans.
Yep. Yeah, our first video, the one that we did for Legion 2 years ago, over a million views.
That's awesome.
Yeah. A lot of really shitty trolley comments, but a million fucking views.
I know, but it was in the Blizzard loader. It was in the launcher. Yeah. That's cool, man.
Yeah, it was shooting in the number one spot in the Blizzard launcher for the 3 days leading up to BlizzCon that year, and that was a pretty big deal. And they were performing at BlizzCon that year, so that was pretty cool. Last year, we did a video called Eat Us Alive. It was themed for the 7.2 expansion, and that one didn't do as well. It was on the Blizzard launcher as well, but it was only up there for a day or two, and it was like off in the side position. It wasn't like the primary thing that came up, because I don't remember what was going on simultaneously with that. But there was bigger news, so they got bumped off to the side, so we didn't get nearly the traffic. But this year, rumor has it, I can't say with any total authority, but rumor has it we're supposed to be the number one spot on the launcher again. prior to BlizzCon this year. So hopefully, if that happens, we'll get a decent amount of views, and the trolls will come back out to kick our ass. But you know what? Bring it on. I don't care. It's fun. It's all fun, and I don't read the comments. So
yeah, don't. I left a nice comment on their YouTube page for that video. The first one. I said awesome video or something, and that Tauren kicking the trash can. He's going places. That's gold, baby, solid gold or something like that. And they actually responded. They were very cool about it.
Yeah, they respond to most positive comments either on their social media or on YouTube. They'll respond to because they're cool like that. And that Tauren kicking the trash can, that was actually turned into a meme that floated around certain Warcraft pages for a while.
Nice.
Yeah. So that's as close to internet famous as I'll ever be.
Probably. Yeah, a meme. That's incredible.
Yeah.
There was a... What's the Grandpa Kong's name in
Cranky Kong?
Cranky Kong, yeah. He was. I always loved it. His tweet was, "I'm a meme." just makes me laugh every time. Oh my god! My goodness.
Well, cool. Yeah, definitely go to Indiegogo and search for Songhammer and give them some shekels, and maybe Randy will get a couple of those shekels for all of his hard work.
Yeah.
Shekels
maybe, but
makes the world go round. What about you, Justin? Anything you want to talk about?
It's my birthday.
You like the grand the grand wizard? No, it wasn't the grand wizard. Grandmaster.
Yeah, my buddy.
Yeah, almost.
I know. Two more days. June 30th. I am accepting gifts.
25 hours away.
You know what? Speaking of Jeff Goldblum. Felix got to watch The Fly for the very first time last Sunday. I invited him over. He had never seen it. It was like 50 cents on Amazon, so I bought it. And I was like, are you sure you can watch this? This is Cronenberg. He's got some hard-to-watch stuff. But sure enough, he sat through it. He liked it. And I'd never realized this, but Cronenberg actually has a cameo in the movie. He plays the gynecologist.
That's funny.
It's very apt.
Yeah, I know, right? You're going to be somebody in a movie. You might as well be the gynecologist.
Like, I haven't seen The Fly in forever.
Yeah, it's crazy.
Hold up.
I think so, only because there's sort of this era in the 80s where practical effects were very effective. And while, you know, a lot of times like a flesh tearing or something like that looks kind of cheeseball. There are plenty of effects that actually look incredible. And I think that it is in that boat. I do think that it has some really cool moments. But having said that, the hair, the clothes, it's a little hard to get past sometimes.
Right. He is directing, I think, since 2014. Map of the Stars was the last thing he directed.
Holy shit. And you know who else is in this movie that I didn't even know? I couldn't believe it. But the creeper from Don't Tell Mom the Babysitter's Dead that's always trying to get with Sue Ellen, he is Gina Davis's ex-boyfriend / editor. I was like, holy shit, I know that guy. He's a real piece of shit from Don't Tell Mom the Babysitter's Dead.
It's the one who's not David the Cut.
Yeah. Market yourself, Metallica. What a great movie that is. Such a gem. Yeah, if you haven't seen it, check out Don't Tell Mom the Babysitter's Dead. Not only does it have an incredible, ridiculous title, but it is a highly quotable movie. Dishes are done, man. Shit's gone, man. Holy shit, it's a great movie. I love it.
I'm right on top of that, Rose.
Right on top of that, Rose.
Anytime Amy asks me to do something, I'd be like, I'm right on top of that, Rose.
Oh, it's great. Love it.
Well, make sure that you tweet at Edgy Armo all your birthday wishes.
Oh, shit.
And Hugh accepts gifts of used panties.
I do. I am not going to lie. I have my fair share.
And if you send a picture...
Out of a vending machine.
Yeah, you got to send a picture of you wearing them so he knows... What he's smelling.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
He doesn't want those strange panties. Well, cool. Well, thank you guys for joining us for another great episode of the Geek Legacy Podcast. And, of course, as we mentioned, go to geeklegacy.com for all your geek news and reviews. And while you're there, listen to the Pixelated Podcast. Justin wakes up early to do that for you. And,
too early.
Him and Steven talk about video games, and they have a delightful time doing it, and you will learn something. You'll laugh, you'll cry, you'll be a better person for it. So make sure you do that, and throw us a like on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, at Geek Legacy. And until next time, we will talk to you a different time.